For the price of a half pint, your pint will overflow. Tolkien fans, we are days away from the ultimate review of Rings of Power Season 2. Join me and fellow hosts from Captain's Pod, Lorehounds, and Rings and Rituals for an epic two-hour livestream event where we break down Amazon's Rings of Power Season 2. We'll explore the story, characters, visuals, music, and how faithful the show is to Tolkien's writings. And we want you to join the conversation. Submit your questions, vote in live polls, and engage with fellow fans. Don't miss out. Secure your spot now at ringspodcast.com/live. A portion of proceeds will go to charity. That's ringspodcast.com/live to reserve your place in the ultimate review of Rings of Power. My patience with Rings of Power might finally be running dry. With 7 episodes of Season 2 out as of this recording, I've got to admit it's still feeling pretty meh to me. I'm not giving up yet, and I hope you aren't either. Here's why. I've had several messages on Instagram, plus seen plenty of comments from people who, after watching the show, felt inspired to dive into The Lord of the Rings and even The Silmarillion for the first time. Honestly, that's thrilling. If Rings of Power is enough to spark that journey for millions more people, then they're in for something truly magical in Middle-earth. And if you are just starting your journey into the wider world of Tolkien's works after watching Rings of Power, then I say welcome, and I'm glad you're here. Even if the show isn't the on-screen adaptation masterpiece we hoped for, Tolkien's world always has something special to offer. So today, let's dive into Episode 6, Where Is He?, from Amazon Prime's Rings of Power Season 2, and see if we can uncover some hidden gems together. I'm Aaron, your host and guide to wandering Tolkien's Middle-earth. A big, grateful shout-out, and a raised pint, to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. Your support means the world, thank you. And hey, if you'd like to join the Fellowship of Wanderers by supporting the show, whether through a membership or just a few Dr. Peppers, sadly still not a sponsor, head over to ringspodcast.com/donate today, and at the very least, tap that share button and send this episode to a friend who loves Tolkien, or maybe just needs something new to listen to. Now, let's wander. In this episode of Rings of Power, Celebrimbor seems to be getting crazier as he attempts to forge the Nine Rings, Adar and Galadriel discuss Sauron, in Numenor, the conflict between the Kingsmen and the Faithful heats up, culminating in a trial by Sea Monster for Muriel. The Stranger gets lessons from Jedi Master Yoda, Tom Bombadil. Nori and Poppy start to put down some roots among the stores. Today's review will be a little different. In past reviews, I've gone scene by scene, pointing out details and digging into the lore. But for today, I want to remind you of what makes a really good fantasy story, as outlined by J.R.R. Tolkien himself. Let's go back to 1939. 2 years earlier, The Hobbit had been published, and Tolkien was working on a quote-unquote sequel that would later become The Lord of the Rings. That year, 1939, Tolkien gave a lecture that would later be printed as an essay called On Fairy Stories. We've explored this essay deeply in Lore of the Rings episode number 95, so you can go back and refresh yourself on the details if you need to. The essay lays the foundation of what Tolkien believed made a good fantasy story. One element of a good fantasy story is what Tolkien called an inner consistency of reality. This means that a successful fantasy world must follow its own internal rules and logic, making it believable to the audience. This internal consistency allows the audience to fully immerse themselves in the secondary world of the story, accepting its wonders as real within the story's context. Thus, we can be enchanted, Tolkien's word, not mine, enchanted by a story, rather than merely suspending our disbelief. Keep this idea in mind as we explore this episode together. I'm going to point out a few things and ask, does this stay true to the internal reality of this world? Is it believable within the story that Rings of Power is trying to tell? I know by the end of this review, you'll be able to really articulate at least one reason why Lord of the Rings fans have lost all patience with the show, like I mentioned at the top. Let's start with the opening scene. Arondir is running through the forest. He's been running from the Southlands, apparently, with no gear besides his weapons. Elves are incredible creatures, but they still need to eat and rest sometimes. But here's the bigger problem. The only reason he left the Southlands was to track Adar's army. Adar's army had left an incredibly huge destructive path in their wake. So destructive that the Ent and Entwife were ready to kill any humans they found. So Arondir has been following the army, presumably following their path. But where is the destructive path? Are we supposed to believe that he's lost the trail? Or that the army was so destructive, but suddenly they are not? If Arondir is following their massive, hard-to-miss trail of devastation, why does he need to find a scrap of cloth that shows where the orc army is going? And besides that, he doesn't even search the bodies. He walks right up to the orc with the map and looks right into his gauntlet, even though there's just a tiny edge visible. But these orcs are defectors. Why in the world would they keep the map of their destination? Actually, why would run-of-the-mill foot soldiers even have a written copy of that information? Seems like really loose security measures on Adar's part. So, is this believable? Does it have inner consistency? Based on the questions I've posed, it's easy to see that no, already this scene doesn't make sense. It is not consistent with other elements and details that the show has already established. To make matters worse, this is the only scene with Arondir, the entire episode. So it's almost as if the scriptwriters were sitting around the writing table thinking about something like, we're going to have a big battle with the elves, but Arondir is the coolest elf, so how do we get him away from Isildur and up to Eregion to fight in the battle? And then we get this scene that simply introduces quite a few inconsistencies, and we are not standing out on the right foot here. Maybe it'll get better. Let's keep going. Celebrimbor is in his shop giving a speech to the rings that are eluding him. He tosses the fragment onto a pile of metal shavings, and there's a mouse hanging out. Not sure why a mouse would be in a pile of metal shavings, since mice like to eat food, not metal, but it's only there as a setup for future scenes. It doesn't fit with internal reality. Verdania, the spokesperson for the Elven Smiths to Celebrimbor, says they are laboring as hard as they can, but we've only seen the smiths stand around and fold their hands like kicked puppy dogs. These smiths do not seem to be the great smiths who for centuries have labored alongside Celebrimbor. And later, it is revealed that Celebrimbor is the chief administrator of this elven city. Nowhere in this show, in the 13 episodes before this one, was it established that Celebrimbor was the ruler of the city, only that he was a craftsman, even though we've hardly seen him actually do any real crafting. So if he were the ruler of the city, why didn't he know before this moment that Mithril was running low and the dwarves were ignoring them? Perhaps we could say that he was too consumed with the ring crafting that he couldn't attend to matters of governance. But that has not been established, and only now, after 13 episodes, is starting to be a plot point. Annatar comes in, sees that there's trouble, and says, "Everyone take a respite." That phrase seems so jarring, because the writers took a very common phrase in our world. Alright, everybody, take a break. And whipped out their Middle-earth thesaurus and picked a synonym that sounded Tolkien-ish, and replaced break with respite. That's jarring, and it takes us out of the story. It's not consistent with this world's inner reality. So Annatar takes over all matters of administration for Celebrimbor. This moment probably would have been a lot stronger, a lot punchier, but again, we haven't really seen Celebrimbor as the governor for these people. We've only seen him as a prideful craftsman, or at least we've been told that he's a smith. So when Annatar takes over the government, it just falls flat. We're like, okay, whatever. But it gets worse. He says, "What seems to be the issue?" as if asking the people that he didn't know there was a problem. But earlier, he told Celebrimbor that he had bad news. The bad news was that the people wanted to see Celebrimbor. Is that really bad news? Why would Annatar frame it as bad news unless he knew, but then turn around and ask what the problem is? And who knows about the problem? Myrdania, the elf who was just in the forge with Celebrimbor. She knows more about the problem than Annatar does. How? And why is she, a helper in smithcrafting, why is she, like, in the know of military matters and policy? Oh man, I'm not even done with this one. In front of the group of all the elves of this place, apparently there's only like 30 elves who live in the mighty Eregion, Myrdania says, "Show him." But in the next scene, the whole crowd has dispersed, and they walk over to a body with a message carved into its chest. There are so many inconsistencies here. There is a dead elven warrior, on a litter, in the middle of the town square. The elves are immortal creatures. They do not suffer death from natural causes. So why are we supposed to believe that a dead warrior, with a dramatic message open for all to see written on his chest, is just hanging out in the corner, while no other elf shows interest, and they all gather to hear Annatar announce his governance? Oh wait, I'm going too fast. Annatar only showed up a couple of weeks ago, and he says he's taking over the government, and not one elf bats an eye or even asks a single question? Over in Numenor, the entire plotline of this series revolves around who is the true ruler here. But the wise and immortal elves simply accept Annatar at his word without a single challenging question? Anyway, since nobody else is interested in the dead soldier with black speech written on his chest, Annatar says to show the dead soldier to no one, even though he's already been in the town square and pretty much anyone could have just wandered over to see it. Myrdania asks what the carving says. Annatar says, "Where is he?" Hey, that's the title of the episode. But let's think about what actually had to have happened for this soldier to show up with that message written on his chest. Oryx waylay the road and stop all traffic to the city. The commander sends out a squad to investigate. The entire squad is killed by orcs. Then the orcs decide, hey, let's write a message on this guy's chest and send him back over the river. That's a good idea. Clearly the elves in Eregion know who we are talking about, and they know where he is, you know, because that question that Galadriel wanted to know from Adar all the way back in Season 1, and they know how to read black speech, and they won't retaliate or investigate any further, even though all of their soldiers just died and were taunting them. That is a great idea! Just think about that. Does that make sense to you? It doesn't to me. That seems like idiocy, when you take a moment to think about what Rings of Power is really trying to do. But it doesn't stop there. It gets even worse. Just to recap from the elves' perspective, no outside traffic, a dead squad of soldiers, a message in black speech, a strange foreigner takes over the government. And yet they go about their daily lives as if nothing is happening. Nothing. But Annatar climbs like 5 steps and looks just over the river and hill, and he sees 3 or 4 plumes of black smoke rising in the west. Why does he see them and no one else has noticed? What do your elf eyes see? Apparently nothing. Given all the other red flags that the elves have already seen, nobody looks over the wall to see the smoke, or if they do, they just think, oh, no, it's okay. There's nothing there, just a little forest fire out there. Must be totally unrelated to the lack of traffic and the dead soldiers and the black speak message and the coup d'etat from a foreign stranger. Somebody must have seen something. Does this scene have any inner consistency of reality? I think not. Not one bit. And it breaks the story. It breaks the enchantment. And we are only 12 minutes into this 58-minute episode, and I have yet to find something that makes sense. Fellow Wanderer, I want to hear your thoughts on Rings of Power Season 2. I've watched the episodes, dug into Tolkien's writing, and shared my reactions, but now I want to hear from you. And yes, there is a chance you could win an Amazon gift card. Head over to ringspodcast.com/survey and answer a few questions I've put together about Season 2. At the end, just enter your email for a chance to win a $15 Amazon gift card. But here's the deal. The survey closes at 10 p.m. Eastern on October 10th. That's next Thursday. So if you want your thoughts included, don't wait. Go to ringspodcast.com/survey today and share your impressions of Rings of Power Season 2. That's ringspodcast.com/survey. Thanks, and I can't wait to hear from you. All right, let's go to Adar and Galadriel, who are having dinner. Isn't that nice? Honestly, it feels a lot like Indiana Jones and the, what was that, Raiders of the Lost Ark? That little dinner between the villain and the love interest? I can't even remember their names. It reminded me a lot of that one. Anyway, I digress. Adar does explain Sauron's power, and it's okay, but it sets up a bigger problem. If Sauron's power is to promise you what you want, and to think that you can actually have his irresistible power, why does he need the One Ring? Why does he need any Rings of Power for that matter? Indeed, Adar seems to be describing the effects of the One Ring, which has yet to be forged, more than he is describing Sauron's power. But that's the problem. Sauron has power to do anything and to be anything, according to this show. There's no limits on his power. There's no other powers that can resist it. Why does he need magic rings? It breaks the inner consistency. Galadriel's response, that she wanted an army, seems so hollow compared to her motivation in the first season. She didn't want an army. She actually had one, if 12 elves makes up an army. She wanted revenge. That was her primary motivation from the very beginning of Season 1. She wanted to avenge the death of her brother Finrod by destroying Sauron herself. The army was ancillary to that motivation. So as a character, she is not even consistent. And no, she's not deceiving herself, because she herself articulated her own motivations very clearly in Season 1. Adar is at least consistent in wanting to be called Uruk, but he says that many tales have been told about the Iron Crown of Morgoth. That's the screenwriter's way of saying, yeah, you know, in the Silmarillion, the Crown of Morgoth was made into a collar and put around Morgoth's neck to restrain him. But that's not cool for our story, so we'll just have Adar say that it was just another lie that the elven folktellers came up with. And Adar says that he used the crown's power to slay Sauron. But he literally didn't. He didn't use its power. He used its spiky things to stab Sauron. And then the orc stepped in and cut him up. Adar didn't use power, he used a weapon. And how did Adar know about the three rings? How did he even know about the elves fading? That secret was kept tightly by Gil-galad, so tight that even Elrond wasn't allowed to know. But yes, in episode 1, the three rings saved the tree, but again, how does Adar know? He simply says, it is said that the three rings saved the elves. Like, the it is said is such a cheap plot point. The news had barely reached Eregion. Does Adar have elven spies? How did he find out about these rings? There is no setup for this, no scenes showing us how he finds the information. The writers just need him to know, so poof, they wave their magic writing pencil and add our nose. Since we're on the topic of Radar and Galadriel, let's skip ahead to their later scenes of their conversation. Galadriel betrays all of the elves. Without thinking, she just outright gives up all the information she knows. She tells Adar who and where Sauron is and about the three rings. And then she goes on to say that he's there to craft the rings to dominate my kind. How does she know that? They have no information about what's going on in Eregion. That was the entire point of them going to Eregion on the little scouting expedition with Elrond. All they know is that Gil-galad's letter never reached Eregion. As far as Galadriel actually knows, Halbrand has left Eregion, and Celebrimbor is sitting around waiting for instructions. How does she have magical knowledge? Oh wait, it is the vision in the grove where Celebrimbor speaks out loud the ring verse from Season 2, Episode 1. Okay, so she knows. Because her ring gave her some special vision of the future. But is that consistent with this story? No, it's not, and here's why. Because every object of power, and apparently every parent, it seems, has visions of the future in Rings of Power. The Elvestone in Numenor gives visions. Cayman's mother has prophecies of the future. Miriel did. Miriel's dad had visions of the future. Durin's dad also has a vision of his baby being strong. Elendil saw the future. The Stranger sees the future and asks Tom about these visions. Everyone has visions of the future, whether they have a magical object or not. That is the only power of any object and anyone who the writers think is convenient to have a vision in the future. What's so special about the rings if they give visions of the future? Practically nothing, since anything and anyone else can also have these future visions. It's really dumb. At any rate, Galadriel plays right into Adar's hands and reveals everything to Adar. And well, finally, the show takes on a bigger scale. Adar reveals that he has more than one legion, as if we all know what that actually means, and all of a sudden the orcs have giant siege weapons. Those take some time to build, and we're supposed to believe that only now the elves realize they are under attack? Okay, one cool gem. Sauron is able to convince Celebrimbor that all is well, and the shot that shifts from Celebrimbor's vision of peace to the dark chaos that is actually happening was pretty cool. Nice visual storytelling there. But this sequence is not without its problems. The first is when Annatar presents the so-called Mithril powder to Celebrimbor. How did he get that? The dwarves denied it to him. Is it just fake blood from cutting his hand? Plus, it's not even powder, it's like tiny shavings. I'm no smith, but that doesn't seem like powder to me. And does Celebrimbor do any actual crafting and smithing, or does he just sit around and sketch ring designs all day? After that, when the chaos is revealed, all the elves are scurrying around before the attack has even started. They're like running all over the place. Why are they not preparing for an attack? Why is the only thing we see surprised chaos when these elves have been having signs and red flags this entire episode? All of these details break the enchantment. There is no inner consistency of reality. Or at best, very little consistency. Things happen magically. People just know stuff. Characters are inconsistent. It's just things for the scriptwriters that they just need to have happen. And not actually good for the actual story. But even for all of this, we've only tracked the elven storylines here. I haven't even gotten to Numenor and all the rest of the plot lines. We'll get to those right after this break. We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Fellow Wanderer, I want to hear your thoughts on Rings of Power Season 2. I've watched the episodes, dug into Tolkien's writing, and shared my reactions, but now I want to hear from you. And yes, there is a chance you could win an Amazon gift card. Head over to ringspodcast.com/survey and answer a few questions I've put together about Season 2. At the end, just enter your email for a chance to win a $15 Amazon gift card. But here's the deal. The survey closes at 10 p.m. Eastern on October 10th. That's next Thursday. So if you want your thoughts included, don't wait. Go to ringspodcast.com/survey today and share your impressions of Rings of Power Season 2. That's ringspodcast.com/survey. Thanks, and I can't wait to hear from you. Okay, let's drop by Numenor, if we must. Last episode, Pharazôn promised to give his son some secret family history knowledge said by his mother if Cayman succeeded in a task. Well, he did. He cleared out the faithful, but we don't get to see the secret? Why bring it up at all? And then there's the trial of Seabeast. And then there's the trial by Seabeast. The whole point of the trial is to see if Elendil will stand by the ways of the Valar. Yet Muriel shows up and takes the trial in his place. Farazan sees this as a way to get rid of his political rival, so he allows it. But this whole trial thing is a horrible, horrible mistake for Rings of Power. Muriel faces the sea monster, and apparently the Valar judge that she should return, so she's like innocent or something. But hold the phone. This isn't the first time a character has gone head-to-head with the sea monster. In the first episode of this season, Halbrand slash Sauron was in the water and faced his own trial. In that case, too, the sea beast turned aside. So does that mean that Sauron is also innocent in the eyes of the Valar? By the Numenorean ritual, the Valar have also judged that Sauron should remain in Middle-earth. I was fine with the interpretation we had before. Sauron and the sea beast were two evil creatures recognizing one another, and Sauron turning the beast away. But after the sea trial, that whole logical reasoning is broken. No inner consistency of reality, no enchantment with the story, poor writing, poor storytelling. Then all of a sudden Muriel is back to being queen? That wasn't even the point of the trial. And if it was, then all the people of Numenor, all 200 of them standing on the ridge, apparently they all now accept the ways of the Valar. Muriel is innocent because this ritual of the so-called faithful deemed her so, and then they all accept her as queen. That is a tacit endorsement of the ways of the faithful and being obedient to the Valar. But the entire conflict in Numenor is about being faithful or not. But here, everybody is showing that they already are faithful. It doesn't make any sense. And let's throw some sea salt into the wound. Farazan does exactly what he accused Muriel of doing, and looks into the Palantir. Which is fine if you want to think, yeah, Ar-Pharazôn, he's a lying, scheming, manipulating kind of dude. But wait, why is he even still in possession of the Palantir? Even when the people have just acknowledged Muriel as queen, wouldn't one of her first moves be to take back the Palantir from Farazôn, since it was a central evidence in her downfall and a cherished possession? But anyway, he still has the Palantir. And let me dig into a little lore here. The Palantiri were supposed to be communication devices, not necessarily revealers of the future. And the only reason that Pippin and Aragorn saw the Eye of Sauron in the Palantir was because Sauron had control of one of the stones, and was seeking for information, but also giving them just a little bit of information to make them back down. It's a psychological war game with Sauron. But in Rings of Power, Sauron does not yet have a Palantir, not at least that we've seen yet. The Seeing Stones were not intended to be revealers of future events, but that is the only power that magical devices can have in this show, so why not? Too much inconsistency. Okay, let's go to the dwarves. The scene where Durin is called to his father is wildly inconsistent and not believable. First, the king says, "I didn't summon you. Annatar did. Surprise!" But Annatar doesn't even ask anything of the prince. He barely even talks to him. He asks for Mithril from the king. So why did he ask for the prince to be present? Also, the king has already decided, so why is the prince even around? And why is Annatar still hanging around? It's all pretty pointless. Plus, the ring gives King Durin super strong punching powers. What are the actual powers of these rings? Entirely unclear and inconsistent. And then there's Disa. Somehow her singing goes far beyond resonating with the mountain. Apparently she can control bats too. And I'm sorry, I just don't find it believable that the dwarf miners are scared of bats. They live their entire lives under the mountain, and to think that they've never encountered a flock of bats before? Why not just duck and, after the bats fly by, continue forward? It rings hollow. I'm not even going to touch on the Harfoots and the Stores, because that storyline is pretty much useless. I guess I'm being pretty ruthless today, but I really don't need to see Poppy and Nobody kissing. I just did not need to see that. So that leaves Tom Bombadil and the Stranger. Tom is entirely different from how the character is in the book. In the book, Tom is completely outside of the events happening in the wide world, and here he is like Master Yoda. I was really upset by this storyline. I told a friend of mine that it was like they took Luke Skywalker's entire story from Empire Strikes Back and condensed it down into a couple of conversations. The Stranger sees his friends in distress. Again, he gets those kind of future vision sort of things, and he wants to leave his training behind to go save them. But his Jedi Master wants him to stay and learn the secrets of the Force. The Secret Fire. Tom is so dismissive and derogatory to the Stranger. What does the Secret Fire need with you as a Master? Like, you've been sitting there trying to teach him and train him. Apparently, at least we're supposed to believe that. He also goes on to say, who are you to give it to them? Like, who are you to give life to people? Well, he just said a few episodes back that that the stranger is a powerful Maiar spirit sent to save the world. He's actually literally there to save people and help them to live. That's who he is, just as Tom said. Why is he so derogatory to the stranger now? It doesn't make any sense. And why does Tom call the other wizard the Dark Wizard? Didn't he know him by a different name when he first came around, before he became the so-called Dark Wizard? That's like Dumbledore calling Voldemort he who must not be named. When the stranger says he wants to help his friends, Tom says he can't come back. Why? He gives no reason, and no reason has been set up. It's just something that Tom says. But even right before he says that, the stranger has said that he has all the time he needs. So which is it? If he has all the time that he needs, doesn't he have time to go save his friends and then come back and find his beautiful little branch? Why can the stranger never return to the path of saving the world? There's no reasoning, and yet we're supposed to believe that the fate of the world is at stake. But that hasn't even been set up yet. All the Dark Wizard does is sit on his throne, handing out diseases to men. He doesn't actually do anything. It doesn't seem like the whole world is at stake here. And he completely inverts the wise quote that Gandalf will later tell Frodo. In its proper context, Gandalf is chiding Frodo for wanting to kill another life, teaching him about pity, and also about Frodo's own limited power. Many that live deserve death, and many that die deserve life. Can you give it to them? Rather, Tom is here saying that you need to sacrifice your friends' lives because they don't matter. Only you matter, because you have a destiny. Your friends are your destiny. And besides that, who are you anyway? It's just so wildly stupid. Well, there you have it. I've been delaying this review for a while because I knew it would be so negative. So for scoring today, this shouldn't be a surprise, but out of 5 wizard staffs, I give this episode a 1.7, which is the lowest scoring by far this season. Story and characters are each a 1. Dialogue a 2, visuals a 3, music a 3, and lore faithfulness is a whopping 0. Yeah, I actually went to 0 on this one. This episode is really pathetic, and I didn't even have to go into the lore or Tolkien's writings to show it. All we did was ask, does this show have an inner consistency of reality? Is it believable in the context of the story? And so many times, in so many ways, the answer just in this episode alone is no. How does this pass for good storytelling? When Amazon has spent more money on this series than any other TV show in history, and they have some of the most amazing material from one of the greatest storytellers of our modern age, and this is the best they can do? It's insulting. It's straight up insulting. Insulting to fans, insulting to Tolkien, insulting to any decent TV show that I could pick up and watch today. I have tried and tried to find the good in this show, and it does have some compelling gems. But on the whole, I cannot endorse Rings of Power. Not with any shred of integrity or respect for what Tolkien actually gave us. That said, if you watch this show and you feel compelled to read Tolkien's works, then welcome. I'm glad you are here. If you think Rings of Power has something to offer and you want to dive deeper, then you are at the lowest possible point of enchantment with a story. And your journey will only get better and richer as you read Tolkien's works for yourself. And I'll be here to guide you through it all. Yes, even through the reviews of the rest of Rings of Power, if I must, if only as an invitation to engage with Tolkien's actual stories. I promise they will enchant you. Thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today. My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost. Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.